Jashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Varadhari Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Varadhari Jashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jayam Vishnupada Paramahansa Privrajakacharya Stutara Satishi Shimaris Divine Gurshla A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sega Hosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Ki Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopakabina Shramakunda Radha Kundigiri Govardhana Ki Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki, Shri Mayapur Dhamma ki, Ganga Maya ki, Jamuna Maya ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Yata Shankyeshu Katitam Yan Mulam Tat Pratakshate Bhakti Yogasya Me Margam Bruhi Vishtarasa Prabho Yata Shankyeshu Katitam Yanmulam Tat Prachakshate Bhakti Yogasya Me Margam Bruhi Vishtarasaf Prabho Yata Shankyeshu Katitam Yanmulam Tat Prachakshate Bhakti Yogasya Me Margam Bruhi Vishtarasaf Prabho Yata Shankyeshu Katitam Yanmulam Tat Prachakshate Bhakti Yogasya Me Margam Bruhi Vishtarasaf Prabho Devahuti uvacha. Devahuti said, Lakshanam, symptoms, Mahat Adinam, of the Mahat Tattva, and so on. Prakrite, of material nature. Purushasya, of the spirit. Cha, and. Sarupam, the nature. Lakshyate, is described. Amisham, of those. yena, by which, tat parama artikam, the true nature of them, yata, as, sankyeshu, in Sankhya philosophy, katitam, is explained, tat, of which, mulam, ultimate end, tat, that, prachakshate, they call, bhakti yogasya, of devotional service, me, to me, margam, the path, bruhi, please explain, vishtarasa, at length, prabho, my dear Lord Kapila. Translation. Devahuti inquired, my dear Lord, you have already very scientifically described the symptoms of the total material nature and the characteristics of the spirit according to the Sankhya system of philosophy. Now I shall request you to explain the path of devotional service, which is the ultimate end of all philosophical systems. Purport. In this 29th chapter, the glories of devotional service are elaborately explained, and the influence of time on the conditioned soul is also described. The purport of elaborately describing the influence of time is to detach the conditioned soul from his material activities, which are considered to be simply a waste of time. In the previous chapter, material nature, the spirit, and the Supreme Lord, or Supersoul, are analytically studied. And in this chapter, the principles of bhakti yoga, or devotional service, the execution of activities in eternal relationship between the living entities and the personality of Godhead, are explained. Bhakti yoga, devotional service, is the basic principle of all symptoms of philosophy. All philosophy which does not aim for devotional service to the Lord is considered merely mental speculation. But of course, bhakti yoga with no philosophical basis is more or less sentiment. There are two classes of men. Some consider themselves intellectually advanced and simply speculate and meditate, and others are sentimental and have no philosophical basis for their propositions. Neither of these can achieve the highest goal of life, or if they do, it will take them many, many years. Vedic literature therefore suggests that there are three elements, namely the Supreme Lord, the living entity, and their eternal relationship, and the goal of life is to follow the principles of bhakti, or devotional service, and ultimately attain to the planet of the Supreme Lord in full devotion and love as the eternal servitor of the Lord. Sankhya philosophy is the analytical study of all existence. One has to understand everything is by examining its nature and characteristics. This is called acquirement of knowledge, but one should not simply acquire knowledge without reaching the goal of life or the basic principle for acquiring knowledge, bhakti yoga. If we give up bhakti yoga and simply busy ourselves in the analytical study of the nature of things as they are, then the result will be practically nil. It is stated in Bhagavatam that such engagement is something like husking a paddy. There is no use beating the husk if the grain has already been removed. By the scientific study of material nature, the living entity, and the super soul, one has to understand the basic principle of devotional service of the Lord. Okay, so now the living entity, the Supreme Lord, the material energy has been described. And yeah, now the process of the relationship between the living entity and the Lord is of topic. So the actual topic is not actually the Lord, the Jiva, and the material energy, but the Lord, the Jiva, and their relationship. The material energy is described because the jiva thinks his relationship is with the material energy, right? Therefore, the need for discussing material energy. Because the point is if we say relationship with the Supreme Lord, then we think spiritual energy, right? You're going to have a relationship with the Lord. You're going to be established within the spiritual realm. But we take that as automatic. If you're with the Lord, you're in the spiritual realm. But the jiva who's not with the Lord then is in the material world. So the point is, are you related to the Lord through his internal energy, or are you making your connection to the Lord through the external energy? Like that. That's the basic principle. So now, having basically discussed the formulas of that, now the devotional process, how that relationship works, how it's manifest, that's the topic now. Why it would be, how do you say? Why so much energy is spent on the material energy, then that is an important point also. Because one could think, as Prabhupada points out, is just you have that proper sentiment towards the Supreme Lord, why so much analyzation is necessary. The problem is because of the aspect of experience, or what we call experiential, that the living entity actually thinks the material energy is the cause of their happiness and suffering, and also as the result. So we're not separating our action from material energy. So because there's material energy, we're attracted to it. Because we're attached to it, therefore we're performing activities that give a result that are also material. Does that make sense? So we're combining all this together. So the analysis then means we're going to pick this apart. We're going to see it separately. We're going to see that material energy for what it actually is, what the actual goals are. This is a smile, you're on the... You're on... No, you're not on TV. I'm on TV. Like that. So the analyzation then is important. But as Prabhupada is pointing out, this analyzation, it's fundamental, basic principle of all systems of philosophy is bhakti. Right? And when we say here all, we mean all. Right? Because otherwise, if Prabhupada's talking about just the Vedic systems, but still, how many people know the Vedic systems? Right? How many understand all six systems? Right? So all philosophy, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out, even the Western philosophies, the Western religions, the world religions, anything that's there, the basis of all of it is still going to be bhakti. But the point is, devotional service is called devotional service when you know what you're doing. Right? If you don't know it, if you're not conscious, right, you can't be God conscious. And if you're not God conscious, how is your activity towards him going to be counted as bhakti? Because only if it's favorable is it counted as bhakti. Right? So being conscious of God, being conscious that the activities you perform in relationship with God are favorable to him, that's called bhakti. Right? Therefore, one has to actually understand if one is conscious or not. What is one conscious of? Is it favorable or not? So, therefore, then we see is that without this understanding, then even though what they do is based on bhakti, it won't be counted as bhakti. Right? The dog is eating prasad. Is it devotional service? Right? No. Because the dog doesn't know it's eating prasad. You understand? It's a simple thing. It's honoring prasad, so it's getting devotional benefit, but that does not manifest as devotional service. It's bhakti agyata sukriti, unknown piety that is based, coming from bhakti. Just like someone may do a Getta Sukriti in the way of karma or in the way of jnana. And they'll get those results. So the bhakti agyata sukriti means that they're performing the activity, but you don't know why you're doing it. You just know, the dog just sees food. He eats it. It doesn't matter. He would eat it. If it wasn't prasad, he'd eat it. So all it is he's eating food. It's not that, oh, he's, you know, the dog is thinking, wow, great. I've been in this park, you know, for the last 3 years. This is the first prasad I've gotten. This is fabulous. You know, he's not thinking that. And then from then on, he won't eat anything else but prasad. Right? It's not exactly working like. So it's a jnana sukriti. Benefit, they get born in human life. They get born in situations in which they'll come into contact with devotional service very easily. These things will be there. The process to actually take it up. Probably means if you check, this is the point that is being made by, you know, one of the senior members of our society about prasad distribution. If the people understand this is Hare Krishna food and it's spiritual, they get benefit of devotional service. If you just cover it by being politically correct and saying that it is, you know, we're doing welfare work and we're nice and we're good also, you know, see, we're also Mr. Goody Goody, you know, like that, then the people only get a jnana sukriti. They don't get devotional service. That was the point. Right? So now, with that understanding, now we will look at all philosophies. The philosophies themselves are always going to be based on the need for the soul to be happy. The need for the soul to find a permanent solution to the problems of life. Right? There's always going to be the understanding that we are dealing with energy. There's always going to be understanding that there is the supreme. All philosophies deal with this, either in the positive or the negative. But because they're not actually based on proper knowledge of God, being conscious of God in the activity, performing the activity favorably for God, according to the directions given by the previous acharyas, it's not called bhakti. Right? And because of its lack of being bhakti, therefore they always fall short somewhere. Its foundation is based on bhakti, but as they unfold it, it never gets to bhakti. Therefore, it's mental speculation. Right? It's just like, you know, what is it? You have the body, right? So, you know, what is it? Dust into dust, ashes to ashes, all this and that, right? The body is something different. It's buried, it's burned, it's do something with it. But at the same time is, then afterwards, when the great day comes, then everyone will rise up in that, you know, dirt and ashes and go to the heavenly planets with that. And supposedly that's the spiritual realm that you'll be eternally. Now, if that's not a contradiction, I don't know what is. You understand? This is why it's mental speculation. Because they don't actually understand what they're talking about. They have glimmers of ideas. You have to understand, everybody who's born anywhere in the planet outside of India, previous to that, they were in India. Right? India is the central station of the repeated cycle of birth and death in the universe. You go from here, you go up to the heavenly planets, like that, you come back down to here. You're not so pious, but not bad enough to be an animal. Then you take birth as a human, you know, well, see, so-called human being, outside of India, like that. Prabhupada says Bengal is east, and the farther west you go, the more degraded it becomes, like that. So these are just facts. So that means naturally in the head, because you've been thinking about it for so long, any planet you go to, it's a discussion of Vedic culture. Anywhere on the Bhumandala other than this particular part, then is Vedic. And even on this part, we're only on, I think, one quarter of it, then is the only place where people actually don't necessarily follow the Vedic culture. So that means the only thing you've actually ever practiced and thought about is Vedic philosophy and culture. So naturally, that will be a basis underlying what people will think. Does it make sense? Right? We get this idea, West is something different. No, West just means, you know, it's a station between, human life and hellish life. That's all. Like that. Now you use it properly, then you can elevate yourself. You don't, then it's a guaranteed ticket down. Right? And depending upon the opinion, there's different things that one is going on. Like that, going to hell generally seems to be in a bucket. That seems to be the common theory. And if you're going to heaven, seems to be on a train, right? So, like this, whatever it is, different people have different poets have elucidated in various ways. Right? Does this make sense? Like that? Probably doesn't, but whatever it is, it's fun. Yeah. So now Devahuti is wanting to know, now that we have analyzed actually the nature of the soul and how the soul is connected with the Lord and not connected with material energy, the soul's natural position of desiring happiness is because of the natural relationship with the Lord. But in illusion, we put this onto the material energy, right? You deal with material energy. Do you deal with material energy that you don't get something from? Some taste, some experience, something that you are satisfied with, right? No. That means you're dealing with energy. Now, the illusion is we think the material nature is the source of that energy. But we have to remember, it is energy, but it's dead matter energy. It's sit there, do nothing, like a bump on a pickle energy, right? That's what it is, right? And I don't mean pickle meaning like a lemon achar, you know, like that. I mean the cucumber kind of pickle, right? Does that make sense? That means they just sit there and it does nothing, absolutely nothing. That's what it does. If you want to know what it does, that's what it does. Krishna's other energies then make it all happen because Krishna's involved. He's in every atom, between every atom. Therefore, it manifests in all these forms that you see. So what's going on here is the interaction between Krishna and his energy, his internal potency, right? It says Krishna, when he comes here out of his yoga maya. So that means if Krishna is dealing with material energy, he's still dealing with yoga maya. We think it's the dead matter, the do-nothing dead matter that's, you know, making us happy and looking bright and shiny and this and that and giving us good vibes. It's just sitting there doing nothing. Right? Then, so that illusion that we don't see that it's Krishna, Paramatma, in every atom, between every atom, he's working with his potencies, his internal potencies, and therefore then everything seems alive because we think it's the dead matter. That's Maya, that's illusion. So that's why Maya has to be studied. Otherwise, we can be very easily tricked because we see there's dead matter that's sitting there. That column is sitting there, but anything you like or don't like about that column has nothing to do with the dead matter. Unfortunately, the example is always behind you, isn't it? I should be pointing this way, right? Like that. Yes. So, she is pointing out that, therefore, now that that has been cleared up, that we know that all there is the Lord and the living entity and the relationship between the Lord and the living entity, can you describe, because that the actual position of the relationship in its natural form of affection, right? Because now it's the previous chapter has been explained according to the knowledge, according to tattva, right? This is the jiva, this is God, this is the material energy, these are the relationships. But now, how to affect that relationship so it actually works within, develops the natural love that's there. So that's what is being brought out. So then, as a final point is now, it's being done through Shankhya. Why Shankhya? Because Shankhya means analytical. So that you can be very, very careful to make sure that nothing went wrong. Just like you learn something, then you apply it. If it worked, great, then you don't need to get into it any deeper. If it didn't work, the natural thing is to go back and analyze every little detail where it could have gone wrong. Right? You know, what action? Did I put too much of this or that? Or, you know, was it I smiled too much or I didn't smile? Or whatever it was, you go through and analyze down to the things. Like this, sometimes you can spend months on it, right? So that's Shankhya. But the problem is that Shankhya without actually a scientific basis. So now, that scientific basis, if it is in pursuance of bhakti, its conclusion is bhakti, right, according to the acharyas, then that is devotional service. But if it doesn't end in bhakti, it ends somewhere else, right, then it's not devotional service. It's that simple. Right? It's that simple. We have to see the, consistency there. That if we can say, no, whatever I'm doing is devotional service, whatever anybody else is doing is not, but based on what? Then you're working in the mode of passion, that you're seeing a difference in souls. Right? The whole last chapter was to point out there's no difference in souls. Right? It means, of course, they're individuals, they have this specific relationship with Krishna, but as far as nature of the soul goes, there is no difference. So if you or your party is fine, and the other person, the other party is never fine, you know, or occasionally fine, where is that coming from? It's coming from the mode of passion. It's coming from the modes of ignorance. It's not fact, right? Because the soul is the same. The nature of the soul in every living entity, no matter what form they are in, is the same. Even the animal is trying to look for permanent happiness. Just the same as a human. Why? Because that's the nature of the soul. The animal is trying to gain knowledge, you know, knowledge where the eating, sleeping, mating, defending can go on very nicely. So they're also pursuing knowledge. They're practicing that knowledge. They become very good at it. Right? A new dog, you know, they come along, they see you, you raise your hand like you're going to throw a stick. They run off so scared. But after a while, they figure out, hey, nothing happened. Until they get to the point where you can even pick up a rock or a stick. You can even throw it at the dog. And the dog will just wait for a moment to see if it's going to get close or not. If it's going to get close, it'll move over a couple of feet so you miss it. And that's it. Right? Or if it's not going to be close, they don't even move. What is that based on? Knowledge. Right? Experiential knowledge of the memory coming from intelligence. Right? So they are also using this process of logic or nyaya just like the human beings. Right? Stick. Me. Where's it going to land? Right? So they go, this stick and me, but the trajectory of the stick is not towards me. It's at a different direction. That means where it's going to land and me are not going to be the same place. That's logic. That's straight logic. So the dog is doing that, but in connection just with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's all. So if the human being does the same thing, maybe it's more sophisticated. He gets out a slide rule to work it out. Or he has to work it out on his palm-top computer, right? But it's the same thing, right? So this Shankhya then is very important that you analyze something so that you understand its connection to between you and the Lord. Otherwise, if you don't analyze it, then you will just be functioning on sentiment. And that sentiment we see by nature is absorbed in the material energy. So how is it out of the material energy? It's by philosophy. So if you don't use philosophy, how are you going to keep the sentiment out of the material nature? Of course, unless you've already founded it in spiritual nature. So Prabhupada says there, it says, neither of these can achieve the highest goal of life, either the karmi or the jnani. He says, or if they do, it will take them many, many years. Right? You know, and this, when we use these things, we're using them very pleasantly, nicely. So many, many years here can mean a lot of lifetimes, thousands, millions of lifetimes. You know, we say today or tomorrow, that means this life, next life, or now or after 10, 20 years. So when you say many, many years, then it means an extremely long time. So it's not recommended because so many mistakes can be made. It says, or if they do, it's going to be so rare. So, therefore, it's the philosophy that keeps us from going back into material consciousness. That's why it's important. So to base things on, not on philosophy, but simply on sentiment is not enough. Sentiment's important. Your inspiration is coming from some kind of sentiment. Your inspiration, your excitement, your drive, your needs, those are coming from sentiment. In other words, from the mind. But if they don't have some philosophical basis, they are going to go in a direction that you don't want them to go. And without philosophy, how do you know where they're going? Right? Sentiment doesn't tell you where it's going. All it does is see you, the situation there, and then it projects this happy, eternal situation. But how do you prove that the thing that you see is going to give you that happy, eternal situation is connected with the happy, eternal situation? Right? If we take eternal happiness, right, which is the experience that we're working on if we're working on sentiment, right? Oh, you're in a situation. This could go on forever. I want it to go on forever. This is so perfect. Like that. But how, the thing that's giving you that, what are you looking at? If it's not Krishna, then it's temporary. And temporary can never give you eternal happiness. So therefore, you won't be happy eternally. And not only that dead matter is not technically connected with you, because you're the soul. And if you're looking at it that it's Krishna and his potencies, then what has that got to do with this dead matter? So since I'm dealing with Krishna in that now, do I deal with him just, you know, mechanically or out of devotion? So it completely changes the equation. So the logic that people use in this material world is faulty. It doesn't matter who they are. The most intelligent. They have their Nobel Prizes coming out their ears. It still doesn't matter. They still are in absolute illusion because they think that what they're doing is going to make them happy. But what they're dealing with is dead matter that they think is the source of their happiness. So they're destined to be unhappy. It's just that straightforward. That's the nice point about the philosophy. You're dealing with the absolute. It has absolute, application. There's no one that can say, it doesn't apply to me. Because that is knowledge in the mode of passion. That they think they as a soul are separate from other souls. It just works. It doesn't matter what living entity. It's the same. Even on a germ, it's the same thing. Right? The germ moves towards things that make it happy, move away from things that don't make it happy. Right? Everybody's doing that. Right? Very, very simple. So Prabhupada saying one should not simply acquire knowledge without reaching the goal of life or the best basic principle for acquiring knowledge, bhakti yoga. So it's not a problem in knowledge. The problem is that knowledge doesn't give you bhakti. If by that knowledge it makes it, wow, you know, what Prabhupada's saying, the previous acharyas are saying, is not only proven in our philosophy by great souls, but even the karmi, you know, intellectuals and scientists and other people back it up. Then it gives you stronger faith, because then you start to see the completeness of everything, how it's all connected together. But if by doing it, then you start saying, well, actually, it's not actually, Vedic dress. It's introduced by the Muslims. And actually, it's not this. And actually, it's all interpolated. And actually, all this and that and on infinitum into complete idiot-dom. Then that is not devotional service. That's not knowledge. That's mental speculation. That is absolutely useless for devotional service. So knowledge is not the problem. It's the cultivation of ignorance that's the problem. So here, they've gone along and cultivated for many years, worked very hard and cultivated a very lofty degree, recognized degree, in ignorance, in illusion. Right? In illusion. And when you say this, what you're going to get is not some very clear, intellectually presented philosophical point, but a very small, maybe not even so well-controlled nuclear explosion. And that is will be their only defense because they have no philosophy, they have no science to back up their ignorance. It's that simple. Right? Because what are they doing? They're doing the activity of husking a patty. Right? The rice is already out and you're beating it thinking you'll get something out of it. But the life is bhakti. So if you're not seeing bhakti and trying to find bhakti in it, there's nothing there. Knowledge on its own is just the husk. The fruit is bhakti. So any activity, any knowledge, right? Any need, any desire, if Krishna is not involved in it, it's just a husk. That's all there is. There isn't something else. It's not like, no, but there's something more. There's always that idea, no, because I think it, it must be there. But that's Buddhism. That's just upfront Buddhism. Right? Because where is the faith coming from? From something higher? No, from yourself. So therefore, you become the controller of the universe. Because I think it, it happens. It's just another form of Buddhism. Right? It's just the stream of the mind. That's all it is. You tap into the stream of the mind. Therefore, then, you know, you're conscious, you're individual. You disconnect yourself from that stream of the mind, then nothing's happening. You know what I'm saying? That's why Shankya is important. Because then you see, well, actually, you know, devotees have been talking Buddhism for years. Having faith in, no, Krishna's going to make it happen. This is what Krishna wants. So we have to have faith. The acharyas have said, therefore we work for it. It will happen. That then, that kind of faith has some value because the center of it is Krishna. So therefore the shell of it becomes useful. Like that. Otherwise it's not. And then what's very, very interesting, just as a last point, always on the comment of the modern culture is so scientific, but they don't like to get into technical philosophy. You know, it's about what you feel, what you want to do. At the same time as if it's something you feel and want to do, you know, it's like they claim that modern science, which is analytical, but their basis for action is sentiment. Does that make sense? Very unique misconceptions. Well, not so unique, pretty standard, but yeah. So basically, Devahuti here then is recognizing that seeing God in everything, understanding who He is, the relationship with the living entity, the material nature, and our natural basis in devotional service, then how can we now analyze that devotional service? So now that we've established, I'm servant of God, God is who is to be served. It's His pleasure we're trying to obtain. What is that process by which we do that? Because otherwise we've already analyzed ourselves and the ultimate goal. You know, material happiness is not there, can't be there because the material, what we call material, doesn't exist. Material energy is there, but what we think is making us happy is an illusion. Right? We don't know it's actually Krishna's energies that are making us happy. Right? We're working in an illusion. So therefore now we've removed the material energy from it as the source of the soul and the goal of the soul. You know, the source of happiness, the goal of happiness. So we've removed that. So that leaves now the jiva and God. So now how to connect those two? Because we really know how to connect ourselves with the material energy. We're pretty good at that. And at least, if nothing else, on a basic animalistic level, at least eating, sleeping, mating, defending will go on. But if we're a little trained, then we can be very sophisticated in the process. It's natural. But that service to God, that we have to be trained in, because that's something new. It's inherent in the jiva, but it's new. Therefore, then she's saying, please now analyze the devotional process. Like that. Any questions or comments or anything? Yes. Example of the dog. Okay, a question on if the animal eats prasad or hears the Maha Mantra, is there no... does it reap any benefits? But it does reap benefits. The point is what is that benefit? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point that's being made. What kind of benefit is it? Means it's spiritual benefit, but that spiritual benefit is not in the form of devotional service. Right? Because devotional service, do you know that you're doing artik? Do you know you're leading a kirtan? Right? Does that make sense? Do you know you're distributing Prabhupada's books? Right? Do you know you're going to Mangal Arati? That's why it's called devotional service. But the point is devotional service comes about by a huge amount of agyata sukriti. It means unknown devotional service. So when that builds up to a certain amount, then you take up devotional service. So it's important. So that dog eating prasad, the more prasad he eats, the quicker he'll take up devotional service. Right? So either in his next life, he'll take up devotional service as a human being, or if he starts speaking to you about the glories of the holy name and all that in this life, then you know it's already happened, right? Like that. So there are cases of that, but that doesn't. Does that make sense? So in other words, there's the spiritual benefit of knowing that it's connected to Krishna and it cultivates your relationship with Krishna. We have to understand there's spiritual, and then there is relationship with Krishna. Relationship with Krishna is always spiritual, but spiritual doesn't mean relationship with Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? The Mayava, the impersonalists, are spiritual. They're not involved in the material energy, but they don't have a relationship with Krishna. Right? That's the point. Right? Yes. How about gulab? Oh, okay. Means they're engaged in devotional service, but they don't know that. So because they don't know that, then it's agyata sukriti. It doesn't mean that they get any less benefit. Because what do we say? What did Prabhupada say will happen to those ducks in Regent Park that ate prasad? He said they'll get human birth, right? So we always say if an animal takes prasad or is engaged in service, they'll get human birth. We never say that they'll go back to Godhead. So that human birth means they'll take up devotional service. So it's an important thing. If you can engage the animals in devotional activities, so like Rath Yatra, people are walking by and seeing the nice festival, they like the mood and all that, they're getting spiritual benefit. But it's not as you know, pure devotional service. It's in the way of bhakti sukriti. You understand? Something special. Because in other words, it's just like this. Let us say you have an artik lamp. And you've been using it to do artik for the deities for the last 25 years. Then it wears out. What do you do with it? Just throw it in the trash with everything else? You'll deal with it more considerately. You know what I'm saying? Just like the human being, when they die, what is their body made out of? The same stuff as the earth. So you could just leave it on the ground, it'll go back into earth. But there's consideration because human life is meant for self-realization. So through the body, you're able to elevate yourself. So there's consideration. So with the elephant, through the elephant, we're able to do those things. And you know what I'm saying? This is Shankya, is that you can still see, in other words, within spiritual, you can tell the difference. Otherwise, then what happens is why we are reluctant to deal with this point is because then if it's not bhakti, then it must be material. You know what I'm saying? But we're saying, no, it's not bhakti, it's spiritual. And it's in pursuance of bhakti, so its fruit will be in the form of bhakti. But it's not enough. Right? I have a seed, and if I sit it on my shelf, it won't sprout, even though it has the potential to become a big tree. And if I, okay, it has to be soaked in water. Okay, let's say I put it in water for 30 seconds, it still won't sprout. Okay, 35 seconds, still won't sprout. 37 and a half seconds, still won't sprout. I leave it overnight in the water, then it will sprout. Right? In other words, when it's exposed to the favorable conditions enough, it sprouts. So therefore, that's why we're always trying to expose everybody to devotional service, because the natural creeper of devotion within the heart of the living entity, then when there's enough exposure, will sprout. Therefore, the constant harinams, prasad distribution, lectures, you know, going out in dhotis, because when people see us in dhotis and stuff, then they think, oh, Hare Krishnas. Right? Very few people, if they know who you are, they're going to generally say Hare Krishna. You know? Like that. So they're going to get constant exposure. Does that make sense? So that then will fructify as the them coming in contact, taking it seriously, and then the creeper sprouting. Then that shraddha will be full. When it's full, then they'll take up sadhu sangha and bhajana kriya. Before that, it's nice. You know, it's great. Does that make sense? So that's why you analyze within the spiritual so that you make sure, am I doing the best? Am I absorbed? Am I engaging in the best possible devotional activity that I could be engaged in, right? Is I'm doing this artic, am I actually thinking of Krishna? Or am I thinking about, you know, something else? You know what I'm saying? That's what the analyzation process is for. It helps you see. That's why I said, if it's going nicely, great. You don't worry about it. But if it's not, then you can analyze. Is that okay? Like that? Does that make sense? We'll stop now because this is the end of class, and then after 5 minutes we'll continue. Are there any questions that anybody wants to have? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktabrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. Is this one your cheddar or Damodar's cheddar?
No, this is Damodar's cheddar. What about that fish with Ramanujacharya?
What about the fish? That's Vaikuntha. They do those things.
And there's one story where Sri Prabhupada, he's with Lokanath Maharaj and he's appreciating the bullocks for Padyatra and he says this will be their last birth.
Then they've got the blessings.
So that's just the causeless devotional, that's the causeless mercy of the pure devotee?
Yeah. I would say so. Even if it is, they go back to Godhead. But then that complete absorption has to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the point is, but in both cases, what's the common element between both of them?
Devotional service.
But more than that, what was in both these stories? He said Ramanuja and the fish, or Srila Prabhupada and the bullocks.
There's the pure devotee in both.
Just question and answer. Three questions. Means on the thing you can say it's question and answer after this class. On the two more seconds, we're almost out the door. The thing is otherwise we can take Jananivas in and then he could sit at Rishi's house but then why sit there when he could be sitting here? I think it would be two cars, yeah. You know, and even he could come in the afternoon probably. Yeah. Yeah. That way Jananivas isn't alone. Yeah. And I'm not exactly sure what time I'll go in the morning, whether I'll go early or a little bit later early. Because, yeah, it just depends what I have to do. If there's anything I can do before 11, then I'll go in earlier. And if not, then I'll go in, you know, 6, 7 or something. Okay. Yes. Okay, yes, yes. Okay, the question is on book distribution, applying the same principle in book distribution of the people, if they know what it is or don't know what it is, they get more or less benefit. Always there will be, because otherwise if it's just it's a book on yoga or something like that, then they'll get it. If they read it, then they'll get benefit. If they don't, they just put it on the shelf. Then when they do read it, they'll get benefit, or whoever reads it will get benefit. Right? So, in other words, it's devotional service. But all these things are devotional service, but the result of them is that one will be able to take up seriously the devotional process. Does that make sense? While if you are not aware of what it is, then even though it's devotional service, you are unable to appreciate, you don't take up the process seriously. You know, just like devotional service in sadhana bhakti technically is not devotional service, because devotional service actually means prema. That's actual devotional service, because what you're doing is purely for Krishna's happiness, his pleasure. Below that, there's still one's own considerations involved in the conditioned state. Does that make sense? So, but because it's in pursuance of devotional service, it's counted as devotional service. So in the same way, the devotional agyata sukriti is also counted as devotional service, but you have to know the results are different. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the results of the devotional service, unknown devotional service, because we call it unknown devotional service, is that by the performance of it, you will come to the point of known devotional service. And from the process of known devotional service, you'll actually come to the platform of prema. You know what I'm saying? And prema itself just generates more prema. Right? It is the end. It is the goal. Does that make sense? So the more people understand its spiritual nature, this and that, then naturally the more they will get benefit when they take up the reading of it, or they'll be more interested to read it. Right? Does that make sense? So if that can be done, that would be ideal. If one could present the book in its natural spiritual context, and the person therefore purchasing it then are giving a donation for it, then eagerly takes it and reads it, that would be the best. But if it's a matter of, some may say, well, but then if some people know what it is, they won't even give a donation. So then better they give the donation. You understand? Because then they're engaged, then the book is sitting there, and one day they might wonder what it is and look at it. Or if not, they're one of their children or relatives or friends will look at it in a moment of boredom or something. You know what I'm saying? So at least they've been engaged that way. Does that make sense? So that would be the thing. So the idea would be to get a balance between those who could be approached by devotees as devotees and take advantage of those, and those who wouldn't be able to be comfortable with that, and therefore one is dressing in a dress that's more, they could relate to more. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you have these missionary preachers that go out on the street or go door to door. Now, if they showed up with, you know, these low-rider jeans, you know, and their underwear sticking out, a huge chain, and their hat on crooked, and, you know, tattoos down their arm, and, you know, swinging their arms funny and everything like this. Now, would that be in your mind that this is someone I'd want to talk to about religion? No, that's why they wear suits and ties. Right? Because religion means it's formal, it's a code of conduct, it's laws of God, so therefore the formalized dress, you connect more with it. You know what I'm saying? So that would mean then either dressed as a devotee or dressed like that. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you have a businessman go by. If another person dressed like a businessman hands him a book and says, I'd like you to look at this, you might take it more seriously than a guy that's dressed like a punk. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then, even in the consideration that you are considering how to get the people to buy the book, and so therefore as dressed as a devotee, they may not appreciate, but then you have to look at it, what would they appreciate rather than what I'd like to be wearing. Because when we say, oh, if I wear a dhoti, then no one will buy a book, that's part of the translation. But the full translation after that part is, and I don't feel comfortable like that, but I feel comfortable wearing these kind of clothes that I used to wear as a karmi before I joined. That would be the complete statement. You understand? So the point is even if we're going to say that we're applying these things, we have to apply them actually what will be get the result. Does that make sense? So we have to look at it like that. I was just in the West, and you know, the devotees there would just wear, you know, whatever they'd wear when they go to university preaching and all that. And then I explained this point one day, and then one of the persons who has to be out a lot in karmi clothes and that, he went out and bought himself a suit. And then later when I visited again, we were at a program at the university, and he was wearing his suit. And before he came up to me at some point and said that this works so much better. He says, before I go up and stick up, you know, posters in the school and this, and try to approach the teachers and other things like that, and they'd either, you know, they'd call security or this or that, or tell me to go away, or they wouldn't take me seriously. I'm in a suit. I can walk in. I can put posters anywhere. No one says it. They just think he belongs here. He's dressed so well. He's supposed to be here. Right? Because the ones making trouble are the students. They're the ones that look funny. Right? So he found that his interaction with, you know, the campus, the students, everything improved. Like that. Does that make sense? So I'm saying, so in other words, if the consideration actually is devotional service, then all these contemplations have meaning. If the center is not devotional service, it's actually, I feel uncomfortable wearing a dhoti, then you're dealing just with a husk. So even though you perform it, it's not so good. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is if you're actually distributing books as a devotee, you would have to be very careful in preaching, right? If you preach at a Sunday feast, you just say whatever you like, or you say something according to what the person needs to hear, right? To be favorable devotional service. Now, if they don't know it's devotees, then basically you're going to be careful to whatever it is makes the book sell, right? And then in that, there are the techniques of what is natural and makes a person feel comfortable, inspired to give a donation. And there's techniques that you can use by which they will just psychologically react and give you a donation because of the nature of them feeling in a situation they don't have any alternative. Does that make sense? So now, in using these two, then the one who you inspire them to give a donation, then they'll be happy that they gave a donation. And then when they look at the book, they'll still be happy. But the other one, they're not necessarily going to be happy they gave the donation, and they may throw the book in the garbage can, right? Or leave it somewhere. Of course, there are devotees who have become devotees from picking up those books in the garbage can. I met one once. He was saying he was in the airport, walked by, was throwing something in the bin, and he saw Bhagavad Gita. So he reached and picked it out and read it and became a devotee. So that person who threw it in the garbage can probably will get more benefit for having distributed a book and made a devotee than the one who sold the book to the person who threw the book in the garbage can. You know what I'm saying? So that whole point of consciousness is very important, because if they don't like it, then how long does it last? You know what I'm saying? How long does that kind of preaching last? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, how many airports are still open? How many places allow devotees to go in and do that kind of sankirtan? Right? But now, a Hari Nam, you can take it out basically anywhere, unless, you know, religion's illegal or something. But you could go out anywhere. Maybe devotees don't like to go on Hari Nam, but it still works. But the other one, even though they would like to go out and distribute the book in the air, they can't. By law. You understand? So the nature of the natural process of the Hari Nam, the kirtans, the prasad distribution, and book distribution in that move, those are always sustainable. You know what I'm saying? There's no law that people going door to door with their religious literature can't do that. But there are laws that you can't go to the airport. You understand? Why? Because then you're presenting yourself as who you are, and they can decide to talk to you or not, and they can close the door. So it's very obvious whether they like you or not, right? It means you're in the airport, the guy comes by, you can keep walking with him, and in fact, you can walk with him until you get to security. Right? So that means even if he doesn't want to talk to you, he kind of is obliged. But if you go door to door, you better be saying the right thing or you're going to shut the door. You understand? So you have to be more sensitive. It develops your personal character greater. If you use that in your preaching, then there's no problem. People who have always been sensitive to the needs of others don't have the problem. You understand? Because they're seeing it in the line of the preaching, actually. Their understanding of the whole process is more complete. So the personal element is there. That's why after 30 years they're still distributing books. Or 40 years. Because they see it completely. You know, Sankirtan. They see the completeness of it. They don't just see it in a certain light, and therefore that light is temporary. Is that, you know what I'm saying? Speaking about some Krishna is something that it can be done in any situation, right? There's rare occasions you can't, but collecting money or not, there are times when you can do it or not, right? We can have an abhishek and glorify Krishna. We don't collect money. You understand? So it has its limitations. But glorifying the Lord doesn't. That's why if that glorification is there, the persons get more benefit. That's why it's why they are the recommended processes. So the more direct you can make it, the better. You know what I'm saying? So in that way, so even you're feeding the animal, it's devotional service like that, but then you also have to deal with it as devotional service. Now, if it's devotional service, right, that the dog is eating prasad, how would you put the prasad on the ground? Would you throw it because you're just throwing it there because they're an animal? Or would you be placing it nicely because it's prasad and you're respecting the animal who's going to eat the prasad? You understand? So even in dealings in that, in Agyata Sukriti, there's still rules. There's still etiquette. That's what makes it more complete. Right? If you just throw the prasad on the ground, the dog will get benefit, you won't get benefit. But you place it properly, understanding the whole process, you get benefit and the dog gets benefit. And the benefit the dog gets, you also share. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes. Funny question. Are we supposed to start? Is that in line with this smile you're on, Maya for TV? So. Can the dog preach to other dogs? And bring the dogs to the temple for a feast. As long as they stay outside, yes, why not?
Well, Buddhism actually have a special devotional service on that side because they are the spreading, consciously spreading.
If he's consciously doing like Jarabharata as a deer is consciously avoiding the other deers because all they're interested in is eating, sleeping, mating, defending, so he hangs out at the ashram to listen to the sages speak like that, then yes. You know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, in other words, the dog has a place, it's prasad. He always goes there. The devotees always put prasad out back. He always goes there. Now, if he makes some friends like that, and even he doesn't, you know, technically preach to them, tell them about the prasad and the temple and all those things, but if out of his affection for them, he brings them, therefore, and shares with them his source of food, then I'm sure he would get some benefit for bringing others in contact with prasadam. Yeah, good chance. Okay, but then you have to put out enough prasad, because there's not enough prasad, he's not bringing anybody, right? Like that. Here, 1 second, we'll go over that. On that point, or here, we'll just go that way. Yes. Hanumans. What are Hanumans? How do we... I'm still not... Who the dog? Who is he? Okay, so etiquette in dealing with animals or other, you know, seemingly unfortunately positioned people. So then in this. This is where, again, this element of Shankya has to come in, is that you have to be able to discern what are the different elements. In other words, what's the soul and what is the material energy or the material situation, in connection with that living entity, right? The circumstances surrounding, yes, that's it. That living entity, right? So now the dogs in the Dom, they have to be somebody special to be born in the Dom, right? So therefore, we will not deal with them out of our own feelings of anger, envy, or affection, or this or that, right? We deal with them according to the nature. I mean, so we deal with them properly according to the nature of what form they're in. Right? So if the dog's out back eating the garbage, then that's fine. But if he's trying to come into your house, that's not allowed because the house is the place is supposed to be clean. Right? Isn't it? And so the dog is not clean. So if the dog comes to your house is not actually up to the standard to perform deity worship and those things. You understand? The soul may be fine, but the body is not. Just like we may say, but that's not, you know, that's not fair, that's not considerate. But then what about if a human being doesn't take a bath? You get up in the morning, don't brush your teeth, don't take a bath. Is it all right that you walk around the community and interact with people, come to the temple? It is? No. So why would it be that a dog can come into the temple or come into a house? You understand the principle? Because they may be... great souls, but they themselves at this point don't know they're like that. Because if they're like that, we'll see they'll be like Jarabharat. You know, as a deer, he'd come. He doesn't say he'd walk right into the ashram and plunk himself right down in the middle. He'd stand on the side. He's a deer. But he would stay and listen. Right? Like that. That I've heard of, you know, so that's an example. I've seen two examples, one dog and one wallaby. Right? A wallaby is like a small kangaroo. In Australia, in the, what do you call it? The Moolamba, the farm. Their temple, the sides are glass, so you can see into the temple from outside. And so every Mongol Arctic, that dog and that wallaby would sit there and, you know, look at the deities, the whole Mongol Arctic. And after Mongol Arctic, they'd walk off or hop off, whatever is there. Like that. Every day. Like that. So that means there's something special there. Right? Because otherwise that Brahma Muhurta generally is the favorite time of dogs to sleep. They stay up all night howling and fighting and barking. And then sleep during the Brahma Muhurta. But this dog was always there. But it doesn't mean he comes into the temple. Oh, the wallaby's here. Let him into temple. Hey, you want to lead kirtan today? You know, then you don't do that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? In other words, according to the situation they're in, you deal with them. A baby, do you deal with them as like an adult? No. An adult, do you deal with them like a baby? No. So therefore, the physical form and the condition of that physical form is what is considered in the etiquette. So that means you won't deal roughly with, you deal with them in a way they understand. You come up to a dog and you say, "My dear sir, it's not proper that you're sitting here and, you know, digging holes in, you know, our front porch here because we use this for, you know, different devotional activities. So could you kindly not do that?" And the dog will probably just look at you and when he stopped talking, put his head back down again. Or if you keep talking and look at him, he'll get up, walk over a few feet and then sit down. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, there's certain noises or hand gestures that he understands he doesn't belong there. And the areas where he can be, you leave him alone. Does that make sense? So you don't just harass him because he's a dog. No, it's just you deal with them in a way they understand if, as a dog, they're doing activities or in a place that they shouldn't be. Right? If they're sitting out in the road there, then, you know, that's where they sit. If they come inside, then they get some trouble. Or if they're sitting outside in the road, that's fine to sit there. Then they start howling away and we can't hear the class, then they got to shut up. Because the glorification of Krishna is more important than his, you know, lamentations of woe. But devotees harass them, they harass everybody else also. You know what I'm saying? Married women harass unmarried women. Women with children harass those without children. Married men harass those that are not married. Right? Community, one community harasses another community. That's going on today. Forget the beggars. How many beggars you see? You know what I'm saying? So it's constantly going on. So it's not just that. See, one has to be careful because otherwise then it brings in the sentiment. They're not supposed to harass, but they're not supposed to harass anybody. So the principle, I don't harass anybody, it's the same thing. It's not a separate presentation or separate understanding for a beggar or for a dog. The point is there's etiquette to be followed by a beggar. A real beggar sits down. And then you, behaves nicely, they're respectful. Then you give them a donation. Or if it's such that it's on a place where they have to be moving, but they're respectful, they don't bother you. If you don't want to give a donation, they leave you alone. But if they harass you, walk, follow you, pull on your cloth, touch you, they're dirty, they're not supposed to touch. Right? If they touch, you can give them a slap. They're not supposed to touch you. Right? You know what I'm saying? You say, "Well, I'll give him a slap." What if one guy walks up to somebody he doesn't even know? You're sitting there at the train station, and some nicely dressed gentleman walks up and starts touching your kids. Or, you know, some lady walks up, starts touching your husband. Or a man walks up and starts touching someone's wife. What would they get? You'd yell and scream. But if it's a beggar, "Oh, don't do that, be kind." It's not consistent. Point is there's proper etiquette to be followed even by them. You know what I'm saying? The point of begging is humility. That's what it's supposed to engender. Brahmacharis go begging because it develops humility. Brahmins accept begging because it develops humility. So that means a beggar must be humble. They have nothing. You have something. They're asking for something. What have they done for you? Nothing. Therefore, they have to be humble. It's just the occupation. Right? In the West, a beggar can't walk around. A beggar sits down in one place. Beggar is walking around, they call the police people. But they sit in one place and don't bother and look, you know, at the proper attitude. People give them money. Like, I've heard of guys in London where they drive to a place, park their Mercedes, right? Get out, walk some distance away, and then sit down and on you know, in front of some, you know, big place, Marks and Spencer's or some place big like this that no one will bother them. And then they collect money. And they make so much money that the guy drives a Mercedes. You know, no joke. You know, you always end up one of these in the, you know, in the sun or something like that. You know, it always ends up, you know. You understand? So there's an etiquette and people appreciate that. We've already explained how the devotees are dealing. But now, is this an issue to you or is this a question of devotional service? Why is it an issue that devotees deal badly with a beggar or with a dog? What is the actual real point? Because we are preachers. We're preachers. Okay, when we're arrogant. What about when you're arrogant with your husband? What if you're arrogant with the teachers over your son? So you're not supposed to, but you do it. You do it constantly. So why not work on that? Why is you've picked out devotees who are throwing sticks at dogs and ignoring all the other social injustice that's going on? Why you've only noted that? It's good that you've noted it. That means that there is capacity to note that there's right and wrong action within etiquette. But why is it limited simply to beggars and dogs? Why it's not limited to other people? Why it's not applied to the other people in the community? We're discussing dogs, yes, but I showed you how the dog question, it is only a small detail in a bigger picture because the devotees don't understand that bigger picture. Therefore, they harass dogs. They'll harass anything they think they can. The man will harass the husband, the wife, the kids, the parents. One family and another family and this family, one community and another. It's going on. It just is going on. Like, I've lived here for, what, since 76. I have never seen or experienced any tension between the Western devotees and the Bengalis. Never. But there's this idea in the Western community that there's so much tension. And that's right here in Mayapur. It's exactly the same thing. There's no difference. You understand? It's the same principle. So that's what I'm saying is that it's a general, it's a principle of devotional service that we deal with all, no other living entity should feel threatened. Right? No other living entity should feel threatened. But that's to everybody. So if they're doing for dog, then that's there. But unless you can bring it back to this, just the principle we have to be nice to dogs isn't devotional. You know what I'm saying? Why are we being nice to dogs? Because we shouldn't be not nice. We should be pleasant. But why should we be pleasant and nice? What's the basis? Give an example to preach. But how are you preaching to the dog by not throwing a stick at him? There's more than the exterior, okay, but is the exterior to be considered? When you're dealing in the material world in any situation, do you have to take into consideration the exterior? Yes, and you take into consideration the spiritual. But now, in your talk about the dog, where's the consideration about the exterior? Is it a dog? We don't know who he was, but you also don't know who the devotee was that you just yelled and screamed at him, you know, over your son. you know, born in a family that they've been worshiping Radha Krishna deities for generations, vegetarians, Brahmins from Dwarka. And you don't mind yelling at them, but you won't throw a stick at a dog because maybe he's a great saint. Now, isn't that inconsistent? Isn't that inconsistent? Is that inconsistent or not? It's all the same for you. That's the problem. If you can't tell the difference between one thing and another, that's a problem. That means lack of intelligence. It's not see, here now you're using it the other way. The dog, oh, we're so careful about. But the human beings, oh, we're not into bodily consideration. This is very inconsistent philosophy. But you don't support it, but you do it. Yes. Okay, why don't we move on from here, because it appears that you're... This is what I'm getting from here. I may be totally wrong. You want to know why devotees are behaving badly with dogs. I have explained it and shown how the higher principle of that principle of not behaving badly to dogs should also be reflected, and we don't behave badly with humans. And people should see the connection between them. But at the same time, they have to see a dog as a dog. So if he's trying to come into your house, you have to say something. You let him into your house, then you're just as dirty as the dog. And being dirty is not part of devotional service. So the sentiment where your kids play in a tent with dogs all day and get lice is not a devotional service. Huh? But the point is they're all there and all lovey-dovey with them. Your kids. Yes. I've seen your kids walking around carrying dogs, keeping them in a little tent. Yeah, so my point is like that. So we should be that lovey-dovey with the people also. If you're going to be lovey-dovey, be with everybody. Or if you're going to be strict, then be strict with everybody. But don't be nice with the dogs and not nice with the people. That's what I'm saying. Be consistent. No, but the point is here, I find that I don't see, this is my problem. I don't see that this is a philosophical discussion. I see it as basically a moralistic discussion where you want to know, is it right or wrong for devotees to behave badly with dogs? And I've already said, no, they're not supposed to behave like that. But we're trying to make it into a philosophical discussion, showing its connection in the devotional process, how that same principle is to be applied within our life to everybody else. Like that. But as soon as I bring up these points on the considerations of someone else, we consider the dog, oh, he may be a great Satanist last life. And then that's why we have to deal nice. But if I bring up the human being, that the human being may have been a great personality in their last life, then it's like, oh, we don't worry about these bodily designations. I don't see any difference. But if you can't see the difference between a dog and a human being, you got a problem. Yes, because you spoke a dog and you're attached to dog. I moved on from dog 20 minutes ago. If we talk, someone says green jello, and then we start from there, and then we go off into something about Ramachandra because he's green. Is there a problem? Do we have to keep bringing it back? No, but I was talking about green jello. Yeah, that's the whole point. You're simply, and that is what? And that is, you don't want to be misunderstood, means you've got to be the right person, means it's your identity, means it's ego. Yes, so therefore, if it's a course, then why am I supposed to be subjected to that? You're sitting here trying to prove that you're not having a moralistic discussion, that you're purely on the spiritual platform seeing everything equally. So then that would have been understood in the first point. But you keep bringing it back to the dog. So then I have to try to take it a little further and a little further. Does everybody else see this, or am I the one that's nuts here? Others see this? Okay. So in other words, your ego now is getting in the way of this discussion because you want to show, no, I'm not wrong because I do see things spiritually. It's everybody else. Don't you see? My point is no one else sees it spiritually. Only I'm seeing it spiritually. Yes, my point is it's there. So therefore we started with the dog, but then I'm trying to take it into the community, because how often do you bump into a dog? You know what I'm saying? How often? But bumping into other devotees is happening all the time. Like here, this room is full of devotees. There's no dogs here. We can go downstairs, there'll be no dogs. So that means the chance of bumping into another devotee is greater than a dog. So therefore, we took your point very nicely that you're starting from the dog. And taking that example, that trying to expand that into how you deal with humans. But you keep bringing it back to the dog. And then trying to show how you're not wrong. And the funny thing is everyone else in the room can see it but you. That's the thing that I don't understand. You're not thinking like that. Okay, so then we've completely misunderstood. Okay? We've misunderstood. You're simply trying to see that people will behave nicely with all living entities. Right? Humans and dogs alike. Okay, so then we're done. We're on the same page here. Okay, thank you. Yes. Objects. Okay. Is okay, which is better or which is worse? Or just a comparison? Okay, so the person doesn't, you preach, you sell the books, you're selling the book, you're preaching about Krishna. Then you try to, you speak about Krishna, so therefore they don't want anything to do with Krishna, so they reject the book, right? And they don't give you a donation. So is it better that they don't, you don't speak about Krishna, but they give you a donation? Yes, it would be better, because they're engaged. That's why it says don't say too much. In other words, you're trying to get them interested in the book, because if they read the book, no matter what, they'll get benefit. But that doesn't mean that using clever tactics is the standard. You know what I'm saying? Distributing the book is the standard. You know what I'm saying? And you start from one to wherever it works. You know what I'm saying? You start from, ideally, if you can go out, there's the Harinam party, you're dressed up how you are, people know that something's going on, so you walk up to them, hand them the book, and say, you know, we're Hare Krishna, this is that, this is, you know, ancient book about, you know, the Supreme, and this and that. So many things. So then that's, you know, nice, direct, like that. But if you're in a situation where you don't have that background, then you would want to be able to, how you say, find what would work. Because generally people will, you know, the workings of the universe, mysteries of the universe, this and that. What you're saying is in line with our philosophy. But you're using words that you understand what they mean in one way. They have a direct meaning. But how they might understand it might be different. So you're actually speaking direct Krishna consciousness. Right? Because when we say the Supreme, we know it's Krishna. But to them, Supreme just is something bigger than them. You know what I'm saying? So you may use these different things about consciousness and that and understanding who we are, our relation with the universe, with the Supreme. These are what the book is about. But it's language that might be more appreciated. Does that make sense? So better they give a donation than not. You know, like that. That's there. But it shouldn't be that they feel bad about giving the donation. Otherwise, the donation's in the mode of ignorance. You know what I'm saying? They're working on principle. That's why in Gita it defines. Charity in the mode of ignorance means you don't actually want to give it. You're reluctant to give it. So therefore, you get very little benefit. Charity in the mode of passion means you give it happily, but you expect to get some result back from it. Mode of goodness means you give it and there's no expectation. You know, so here it's that they're giving a donation, they're getting the book, they'll learn something about spiritual life or some kind of, you know, uplifting yoga or something. Then that's nice. They're not looking at so much the material gain. You know what I'm saying? They're not looking, I give you money for this book and then you'll change the tire on my car or something. You know what I'm saying? So therefore then, that works. So you want to avoid in the mode of ignorance where they actually didn't want to give the donation. So we have to be sensitive enough to that, because maybe today they don't, but they've come in contact with the devotee. Right? Just that they came in contact means there was something, some reason that they came in contact. There was something that they wanted to know about. They wanted to know, because when they really want to know who they are, then they'll come in contact with the devotees. So they've come in contact, but their inquiry wasn't deep enough. So when they actually come in contact, they can't go through with it. So you want to part, you know, amicably, you know, pleasantly, so that there's a chance for it to happen again. So they bumped into it, got close, but it didn't, you know? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, you come up, you're almost going to knock on the door and you can't, so you walk away. It doesn't mean you won't knock on the door sometime, but it just may take a few more times until you can do it. Then you can knock. Does that make sense? So that's why then it's nice. If they're looked at as demons, then there's always going to be a problem. If you're looking at it as potential devotees who don't actually know they're devotees, then it works a lot easier. Then you'll try to find what works with them, what kind of conversation, what approach, and everything like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. You had something? Last point, and then we'll end. Yeah. Not all the people in the West. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that anybody who is born in a, you could say, religious, noble, or aristocratic family, they've done devotional service. But this would mean a Jata Sukriti. You know what I'm saying? It may be if it's specifically a devotee family. We're talking here non-devotees. You know, so they've done some devotional service, but didn't get very far in it. You know, either it's only on the level of a Jata Sukriti, or they've taken a little further. Like it says, someone who's just begun devotional service and doesn't perfect themselves, they'll go to the heavenly planets by whatever it is that distracted them. Finishing their time there, they'll come back here and be born into, you know, religious or aristocratic families, because the inclination will be of those families to be have time or have value for devotional activity or religious activities, right? Someone who has performed devotional service and was situated nicely in it, if they get distracted, then they don't go to the heavenly planets, they'll take birth in the family of devotees. Does that make sense? Yeah. Muslim or Christian, but looks like this. What's the difference? Now let's say, just take somebody here in Mayapur. Okay? This may be a bit stark. Okay? So we beg forgiveness before we start on the possible starkness of this. You have a Muslim here in Mayapur, and you have the devotees here in Mayapur. Okay, technically, what's the difference between those Muslims and the devotees? You have to speak a little louder, please. They know the Supreme Absolute Truth, but the Muslims also accept the Supreme Person as God. I'm just talking about in fundamentals, not in detail. They don't have as much information. Okay, but neither does a small child in our community. That's another thing, that some devotees are also worshiping Shiva. Right? He's a great Vaishnava. So the main point is that they are completely opposed to the Vedic culture. You know what I'm saying? They're opposed to the Vedic culture. Does that make sense? That's the one thing that can set them apart. Otherwise, I've seen them wearing dhotis, their wives wear saris, cover their hair, wear bindis. They eat the same food, you know, everything's the same. They speak the same language. But they're opposed to the Vedic aspect. How many devotees do you know that are opposed to Vedic culture? That say Varnashram's not important, we don't follow all that, that's fanatic. Here's where the starkness comes in. You understand? If they don't perfect their life and go back to Godhead this life, these are births that are open. They're Dhamvasis, they're right here. They're born in the Dham. I've even seen them sometimes come when they have to go to a court case. I've seen them come into our temple, put money on the altar, do full dandabats, and then go to court. Muslims, practicing Muslims. You understand? So that's the thing, is it's a science. You don't like something, you're opposed to it, then why you would be have to worry about it? Right? As a devotee, you constantly have to hear about Varnashram and this and that, and you don't like, Muslims never hear about Varnashram. They hear about God, they hear about worship of God, surrender to God. You know what I'm saying? These are realities. It's science. But that's why it's only mentioned basically once in the books. Because it's not something we make prominent. But it's still a reality. Right? You know, always don't like spontaneous devotional service. They're opposed to it. Then what are you going to do in Vrindavan? Then they should be going to Vaikuntha. Even they believe in a degree of spontaneity. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't agree to spontaneous devotion, how are you going to get it? Because braja means spontaneous devotional service. Right? Doesn't mean that one is misapplying it, but at least one should be favorable towards it. You know? You know what I'm saying? In our conditioned life. But the point is that, but does the conditioned life give reactions? So therefore, why won't it give reactions? If it's connected to Krishna, it gives no reaction. But if it's not connected to Krishna, not supporting the Vedic culture, is not in pursuance of favorable devotional service to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, talking about someone who, like a smart, is attached to the rules and regulations and thinks simply because you've performed the rule and regulation, that is perfection. Yeah, we have nothing good to say about that. But using Varnashram as the medium through which we engage all the activities of indirect, you know, that we are indirectly engaged in, activities that are not direct devotional service, they're not chanting our japa, right? We never classify chanting japa by varna or ashram, right? Neither deity worship, right? Neither giving class, bhagavatam, neither associating with devotees, neither worshiping the dham, right? So we don't make any varna ashram considerations in there. Do we make varna ashram considerations in pancharatra? No, right? It means in the way of somebody's an initiated devotee, you know, then they can worship the deity. We don't care whether he, drives a truck, or you know whether he's an intellectual down to university. We don't care. If he's second initiated, he can worship the deity. So it's only within Varnashram, within the Vedic, or which dealing with the, in other words, the mundane that's connected to the scriptures. That is, then there's a consideration. Because there is a difference between the occupation of a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, and a Shudra. There is a difference. There's a difference in the lifestyle between a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. There's definitely a difference. The facilities, the mentality, what you're engaging. Brahmachari is not engaging the senses. The Grihastha is engaging the senses. They're both getting the same result. They're both considered Brahmacharis if they're doing that. Right? So technically, the Vedic system, a person going through all four orders is still a Brahmachari. Even he's had 100 children, he's still a brahmachari if his considerations were according to the rules of the Shastra. So whatever is the best place for him to be situated, that's what we accept. Does that make sense? So Varnashram does consider the physical, psychological nature of an individual. If you don't, how do we say it's individual? If we say we can't accept Varnashram because it designates people, but then how are we going to be able to deal, in our liberal way with, applying time, place, and circumstance to the individual, because we can't acknowledge their psychophysical condition, right? I have to be able to say, he's sad, therefore I should deal like this, or he's hungry, or he's not being dealt with properly, right? But that's only emotional. What about how he makes his mind? The other things in society, is emotion the only thing? And is emotion generated on its own, or emotion needs form to generate it? You understand? There must be some form that is generating the emotion. So to ignore form and say we're simply going to deal with emotion doesn't exist. It's nice, but that's what we mean by sentimental. And if they're only into form and forget the emotion, then that's too ritualistic. So there's a balance between the two. There's a balance. I can't hear. Yeah, it means that, yeah. Focusing on the form means we're mechanically following the rules or the different things that Prabhupada's given. You know, it's like when it comes to the temple, it's got to be 26 Second Avenue, but at the same time he drove up in a fancy car, he's got his own house where he does his own thing with his own wife. But at the time when they were living in 26 Second Avenue, that wasn't happening. So why is it one became sophisticated and the other didn't? You know what I'm saying? That's what we're saying, is when it has to be able to see the imbalance between these. Okay. Okay. So here, the idea is that it's natural that husband and wife would advance in Krishna consciousness at the same speed, right? So, but now let's say if the wife wants to be more serious and the husband doesn't because he's comfortable in the material position he's in, should she go ahead and take initiation and do all these things? Or should she not, because she's worried that the husband will get left behind? The idea is that Krishna consciousness, if the husband's favorable, then naturally then one would take advantage, one would take initiation, one would move forward. Because it's such a rare thing, whatever is the situation. Ramanujacharya makes that point, based on the Shastra, that whenever the auspicious time for initiation is when you can get it. Right? It's not based on the planets because it's not a material activity. Right? So initiation means you're connecting yourself to the Supreme Lord through the Parampara. So whenever that can be had, that's the right moment. Right? Considerations that have a bodily consideration, because initiation doesn't have a bodily consideration. Right? Let's say like moving into a house does. The house is physical. Right? But you're going to use the house for Krishna. So therefore, the programs around Krishna consciousness, but picking an auspicious time to move into the house then has a consideration because the house is a consideration. So you pick a proper place so that the planets won't bother your house because you want to use it for Krishna. If it's Krishna's house, why shouldn't it be done at a proper time so that Krishna will get the best benefit? All right. But the relationship with you and Krishna, that should have happened a long time ago. But instead we decided to come here. And coming here, then basically we've been wasting time, as Prabhupada pointed out. So that's why time is discussed, because you have to know what's proper use of time and waste of time. So all this, so when you decide to do what you're supposed to do, then that's the right time. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say you have, someone's done something wrong. So when's the right time for them to correct it? Wait for an auspicious time? No, the sooner the better. You know what I'm saying? So that. But something that has a consideration, like let's say you and your friend want to go out to lunch, right? You know, and go to Govinda's and take prasad. So is there any consideration of time? Yes, because if you go when it's closed, you won't get any prasad. Right? So you have to go in the auspicious time that they're open and prasad's available. So auspicious simply means that that material facility is available. And inauspicious means it's not available. That's what it just means. That's all. It's not something mystic we can't understand. It's just available or not. Does that make sense? So then here's that the wife, if she can get that, then she should take it. Like that. But if to what degree the husband is favorable or not, to that degree she should manifest it or not. In other words, if he's neutral, then she can go on practicing, then great. And he's comfortable, then, you know, his wife's religious, great, nice. But if there's some things that disturb him, then those things then she'll either, you know, keep more hidden or not do or something if it's not so important. You know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't sit down in front of him when he's watching the television and chant japa. It may be annoying. Go sit in your deity room and chant japa. You know what I'm saying? So like that, then one can... but otherwise, the point is one should move forward. Like that. Okay, now, if it's a comment, fine, because... Well, I mean, if it's a comment, because it's time to end. We've already gone for an hour. If having it in an auspicious time is helpful, it's a different category. You know what I'm saying? It's just like let's say, are there any considerations about your car while you're sitting here in the class? No, because there's no connection between them. Right? But if you want to drive from here to your house, you know, as for Krishna, then there are considerations of the car. But initiation doesn't have any connection with it. So generally it'll be on days when there is something special happening, because the idea is the conditioned soul needs religion, needs some form that they can say this is spiritual. Therefore, if you have the initiation on a festival day or something where there's already something happening, then that day becomes more special to you. So you'll take, the tendency is to take the initiation as something special, right? And then the experience of it was very special. So that gives more inspiration. But if, you know, if the situation is such that you don't have that, but you just have the spiritual content or the relationship between you and the spiritual master, then it doesn't matter the situation. Then there's that, if that... you know, greatness of manifestation or the festivities of the ritual aren't manifest, it still works, right? So if there's someone who they wouldn't be able to relate to something simple, then you would avoid that. You'd wait for a day when there's a big festival, then they'll feel it's very nice. But if they're comfortable that spiritual master is passing through, he's there for half a day, you can't have anything like that, but the person's qualified and everybody, you know, they're approved, and then, you know, they come into the room, sit, little speaking, giving of the vows, and then it's done. And then later on, when the next festival is, they sit in the yajna. You know what I'm saying? If it'll work for them, great. If not, then, you know, then they just have the yajna. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so we'll end here. Jai Ho. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Chainitai Gauru Premanandi.